Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program to address the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Chris Kington is hosting the program virtually today while still practicing recommendations for physical distancing. Her guests will be joining today's show by phone and Zoom. We encourage you to participate in today's conversation by sending us your questions or by email to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them into us at 805-549-8855. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for that. Voting is underway here in the 2020 general election, and this election will probably be like no other in U.S. history. So far, more than 5 million people across the U.S. have already voted early. In today's first half hour of the show, I'll be visiting with one of probably the busiest men in the county these days, Tommy Gong, San Luis Obispo County Clerk Recorder, to discuss what's been put into place locally to make the November election safe and secure for everyone, and questions and answers about just voting in this county, both in person and with absentee ballot. In the second half of the show, I'll be talking with members of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. And we'll be talking about the role of the League and most importantly, also the passage of the 19th Amendment 100 years ago and what that has meant. If you want to be part of today's discussion, you can. Call in your questions to 805-549-8855 or email us at voices@kcbx.org. And Tommy, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
You don't look over the top exhausted. So, you know, maybe you've got good makeup on or something. I don't know.
Isn't that mask that I'm wearing? You know, you can't tell. It's really, you know.
Oh, that's not you. Oh, okay. I didn't think you were a poodle, but I guess I now know. So, Tommy, what is happening? Is it just ringing off the hook?
It is. I mean, voter interest and voter activity has been off the charts so far in this election. You know, it was only about last week that we sent those ballots in the mail to every registered voter, and literally ballots were being delivered back to the post office immediately that same day that voters received them. Some of the city libraries started to receive ballots on the very same day, and to the point where some of the libraries were really starting to, their drop boxes were really starting to swell with ballots, and we arranged to have early pickups done. We really do see voters wanting to vote immediately and participate early on. And so far, as of yesterday, I haven't even been able to check with my staff, but yesterday we had already received 20,000 ballots already being returned to us to be counted, to be processed. And I know we picked up a number of trays this morning, too. So it is very brisk, and yet we still have a number of calls from voters. It's interesting for this election. Voters are really taking it seriously. They're calling to, you know, how can I be sure that my vote by mail ballot was returned, that you folks received it? Also, how can I be sure that I have an up-to-date signature on file with you? And so people are really thinking through the process as we describe what happens as we process the vote by mail ballots.
So, you know, when you're talking about that, talk about the kinds of practices you've put into place this year that are different than what you've had to do before.
Yeah, we were already preparing these ballot drop boxes throughout the 19 locations and how we were going to service them. But certainly because the return so early has been so great that we've had to make adjustments in our pickup schedules more frequently, for example. I'm in constant communication with the libraries that are hosting drop boxes, as well as the other cities that are doing so, just to be sure that we know we're not overflowing with ballots, and that I can arrange an early pickup for them. So those sort of things certainly are happening. We have a lot of protocols in place with the two-person rule, maintaining chain of custody protocol, and just being sure that the integrity of the ballots are intact as they are being delivered to our office.
Can you talk about that custody? Can you talk about once somebody puts their ballot into the ballot box, what is the process to get it back to you and counted?
Yeah, so once they're dropped off, they are picked up according to a schedule that is set by the Secretary of State in regulations. But certainly if they do require an early pickup, then we do so. But what happens is we always have two people present when we open the box, and we count those, and the two verify the counts. They record it down on a log sheet that accompanies the ballots with them as they come back to my office, of which then again we verify those counts. We also check on the seals. There are tamper evidence seals with serial numbers on them, and so we know what seals we put on them from the beginning of the period. And when we open up the box, then we record that seal down again to be sure it's the same number where we left it, what we began with. And then they travel back with two people in the vehicle, or sometimes in two vehicles if there's a concern for safety, for example. They come back to our office, and then we verify those counts.
Have you been as conscientious about doing that process? Is that the normal process?
Yes, you know, when we first implemented on a very small scale drop boxes at some of the libraries and city halls, we were beginning to implement all those types of procedures. So for this election, it's more of the same, but also I think a little higher level of log checking and the use of the seals. In fact, there's multiple seals that we have, multiple locks that we have on the boxes, to ensure that they're secure.
There was a news from yesterday that somebody broke into a ballot box?
Yeah, I'm not aware of a ballot box, but there has been some news that some of the post office boxes in a city appeared to be broken into. So what we encourage voters in this case is, if they have any concerns that their ballot may have been compromised, to call our office, and then we'll check to be sure that we receive their ballot, or we can get them a replacement ballot. So certainly there are ways that we can deal with those situations on behalf of the voter.
And when you talked about this process from the ballot box, all of that is with a sealed, it's all done with that not being opened so that someone sees the vote, correct?
Yes, exactly. So what we do is, we seal it with a tamper evidence seal, which if it's broken, you can already tell that it was compromised. But it also has a serial number that we record, and that should be the same one that we, when we open it, that should be the same seal that we receive, that we check out with when we empty the box. So yeah, a lot of checks and balances to be sure that we're maintaining, the safety and integrity of the ballots.
What is the absentee ballot numbers this year as compared to, say, last year or even 2016? Let's compare it to that if you can.
Yeah, so here's some estimates that I've been kind of thinking we're going to have. So one thing I'll say is we have already broken another voter registration record. As of yesterday, we've eclipsed 181,000 registered voters.
Wow.
So it just continues to grow in terms of the level of participation. We've sent out 180,000. We'll have another, 1,000 or so in supplemental mailings coming up in the next couple of days. And what would typically happen, I don't think we've ever exceeded 100,000 vote-by-mail ballots for any particular election. But now looking at projections with 181,000 voters, an 85% turnout, the highest we've had is 83%,
My goodness.
And the premise has been with counties who are conducting elections in this manner, 95% of the voters, you know, who do vote, they do it by mail versus doing it in person. So using those numbers, we could have an upwards of 150,000 vote by mail ballots to process.
Oh, now, my goodness.
This process takes a little bit more work because, of course, when they arrive in our office, then we scan the envelope. We have to do the signature checking for each envelope. They go through a process of being opened and flattened out by staff and then eventually to the tabulation machines. But because of the coronavirus, we've been having to have fewer staff in our smaller offices. And so now we're looking at maybe a 60% capacity, and how am I going to keep up with these numbers? So already this week, with 20,000 ballots already being returned, we're already filled in all of our cabinets where we store these ballots in. And so very quickly am I trying to get some swing shifts going so that we can begin the signature process and catch up on all of these ballots and continue doing so.
So when my ballot comes back to you, how do you do a signature check?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when we scan the envelope into our by these envelope scanners, it captures a whole scan of the envelope where the voter signed. And on that side of the envelope, there's actually a one-time use barcode assigned to that voter for their vote by mail ballot. And so the envelope scanner scans that barcode, it captures a signature that's on the envelope, and then in our election management system, it grabs the voter record based on that barcode and brings in the signature that we have on file for the voters. And so then the signatures are side by side for my staff to make comparisons on. And in the case, I asked my first layer of signature checkers to be more conservative and to go ahead and challenge ones that they're unsure about, because I have supervisors and managers behind them to make the ultimate decision whether to accept or not. The ones that ultimately are challenged, we actually are required by law to send what we call cure letters, giving vote by mail voters their opportunity to rectify the situation, and so therefore be able to count their ballot. From that point, after the signature comparison, then they're opened. We have envelope openers for staff to extract the ballot from the envelopes. We do it in a way so that you can't see the voter's information. So we flip the envelope on the other side so we can't see whose ballot it is as we're extracting the ballots. And then they're brought to tables of where they are flattened out. They're all in batches of 50. So when we count our ballots, we're always counting in batches of 50 to, again, to ensure the integrity of all the ballots that we have on hand. And so, and then they go into the tabulation and then they're stored. Ultimately, after the election, all of the vote by mail ballots that are counted are stored for 22 months after the election. All of our election materials are actually stored for 22 months.
I came across an old checkbook that I had when I was going to toss stuff out. And at one point, I had broken my left hand, and I'm left-handed. And I was looking at my check register, and I didn't know whose it was because it did not look like my writing at all. So if this would have happened to me this year, my signature would not match up at all. And I'm assuming you're taking a signature off my driver's license, right?
It occurs in a couple of different ways. Certainly if someone registers online, then if there is a signature on file with the DMV office, then we receive it and we bring it into part of the voter record. But oftentimes when people were registering on the paper registration forms, then those forms were actually scanned to capture the signature off of the voter registration form. And we keep a history of the signatures on file for a voter. So sometimes we have in upwards of six samples of their signature. And what I will say is the paper form, let me put it this way, at the DMV office, they had been through multiple generations of those pen pads that were used to capture the signatures.
Yeah.
the first generation were not so good, and the images they don't really look as close to a person's signature. So then since a law allows us to compare signatures of the past, that's where we see, dead ringers in terms of those signatures. And in your case, when you had a broken arm, then we would send you a letter saying that your signature did not compare, and we give the voter the opportunity to rectify it. Essentially, to sign that form, the form is sent to the address where we would have sent the ballot in the mail. And so the voter would have received that and then signed that form, and we would accept that as their as another example of their signature that we would hold on file.
Oh, great, great. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. My guest is Tommy Gong, San Luis Obispo County Clerk Recorder, and he's joined me to share information about making November elections safe and secure and to address questions and concerns you might have. To add your questions or comments into today's discussion, you can call them in to us at 805-549-8855, or you can email us at voices@kcbx.org. And Sarah, did you have a question? No? Okay. So just finishing with that, Tommy, if I know in advance my signature wouldn't probably match up, is there something that I should do proactively?
Certainly they can, voters can contact our office. It could be as easy as filling out a new registration form, and that we would have that new signature on file as a result. So we would scan that signature example in. But I think, the whole process with the cure letters, actually I should explain that a little bit. So we'll be sending out cure letters as soon as we have, as soon as we have challenges with certain vote by mail ballots. But actually, voters have up until 2 days before we certify the election to rectify the situation. So I plan, at least in my goal, is to certify the election the day before Thanksgiving Day, so we can all enjoy, my staff and I can all enjoy our turkey and probably drink more than a couple bottles of wine. but they would have up until November 23rd to get that letter back to us or return it to us in person, and we'd be able to rectify that situation for them.
Okay, we had someone who wrote in who said online, it said mine was issued on October 1st, but I've not received it yet. It seems like everyone else did. He or she got their booklet. What should they do?
Certainly call my office. They can call our office at 805-781-5228. And certainly, we that's what we've been telling voters. If you haven't received it within the week, that it's due time to give us a call so we can get you a replacement ballot. And so, by all means, give my staff a call, and we can get you a replacement ballot.
Now, this year is the first time that we've been using the tracking system where they let you know where you're at. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So it's called Ballot Tracks. The Secretary of State has they call it Where's My Ballot. And so now that link is available on my website at slovote.com, slovote.com. And you can register for it. It's free. And what it's designed to do is give notifications to the voters when the ballots are in the mail, when they're in the mail being returned to us, and then ultimately the determination if the ballot is counted or not. I think there's been some growing pains with this system. It was a very soft rollout in March. Not a lot of voters got onto it, but many, many more voters have signed up to utilize that system now. It takes a lot of synchronization to make it work on behalf of the voter. For instance, with the mail service, we have to have all kinds of additional barcodes onto the outgoing and incoming envelope to be sure that they're in the mail being arrived, being sent to a mailbox and also on their return that it's hit the mail stream and being returned to us. I had a voter who reached out to me. They had returned their ballot into their townhouse complex. So that immediately raised some suspicions to me as to how quickly those ballots would be returned to the post office. What ultimately happened was we had received his ballot. We had checked his signature. All was good. At that point, he received the notification that it was received by the election office and is being counted. So I think there was a little bit of disconnect in terms of when it went to the post office, exactly what information, you know, that notification wasn't sent as expected, but certainly when it hit our office, then the information was relayed to the voter.
Yeah, I did go into that, to the line and signed up for the, and I decided to go ahead and use all my options. So I asked for a text, for a phone call, for an email. And the one that came through immediately was the phone call.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen the text yet.
Okay.
So there's some glitches in it.
Yeah, there could be a lot of volume going through. You know, ballot tracks in that case is, you know, they're tracking all the voters in the entire state through this system. So we're all combined in a lot of ways. So you can only imagine the volume that they're having to deal with right now.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about what you've done at voter sites? If people want to come in person, what are you doing to make it safe and make sure that the environment is right?
Yes, that's a great question. So actually, we're open for early voting as we speak. We started it this week. Both in our two clerk recorder offices. So we've pretty much taken over the entire first floor of the lobby of the county government center. We have our voting booths set up there. We have check-in stations set up there. We have our accessible voting devices there, even our ballot on demand printers. And we utilize these and in Atascadero on the second floor of the library in the community room. We have an early voting site. And so it's really helping us provide training to all of the workers that will be working during the 4 days of voting, giving them the hands-on, working with the computers, working with the ballot on demand printers, so they get used to it and they won't feel so, they won't be, you know, deer in the headlights come the 4 days of voting. We have put down decals on the floor, demarking the 6-foot rule. The poll workers are all wearing masks. I've given them shields, encouraging them to wear face shields as well, asking them to take it home with them so that way they'll be for them to use throughout the election period. Hand sanitizer in all places, and just really trying to maintain the proper distancing apart. So it really is kind of providing a prototype for those workers to understand what's taking place as we're serving voters. It's been really kind of a learning experience for all of us that way.
Sarah, did you have somebody who called in?
We have had a couple of people call into our 805-549-8855 number. We've had two different questions. One of them, I think you've already addressed. It's from Judith in Pismo Beach. She dropped off her ballot yesterday at the Pismo main post office. She received a phone call verifying her ballot receipt. Is this a scam?
No, that is not a scam. If she registered for the Where's My Ballot to receive a phone notification, then she's good to go. It's all working.
Fantastic. You had another one.
We did. They're actually pouring in here right now. We've had a lot of calls into the 805-549-8855. Gina just called in. She's wondering if you forget to tear off the I voted tab on the mail-in ballot, would that hamper your vote in any way? And if so, if you realize you forgot to tear off the tab, should you reopen your envelope to tear off the tab prior to sending in your ballot?
Oh, I think she's referring to the voter stub that's at the top of the ballot.
Right.
And no need to remove it. My staff will remove them on their behalf. should that be the case. So there's no need to open the envelope.
And then another one just came in. Are all libraries in slow drop-off locations for ballots?
That's a good question. So the locations are listed on the back of the voting instructions. Namely, the San Luis Library is not included because they're only a block away from us. So we just thought it'd be easier to encourage voters to drop off their ballots at our office instead. That might be something to waive in the future for future elections, but right now we were trying to be a little efficient in how we service those boxes.
Fantastic. And, you know, aside from the other things that you're doing with trying to make sure that everything's safe, some people have expressed concern about whether or not there would be any kinds of attempts to interfere in their voting process or intimidation. Can you speak to that at all?
Sure. We've been taking that pretty seriously, reading about things going on across the nation. Certainly, we're bringing it to our poll workers' attention, especially our coordinators who oversee the entire operation of each of their 23 locations. We've been in communication with law enforcement authorities to develop strategies for quick response in the event, and any elevation, should there be an event that occurs early on, any elevation that we might employ to keep it safe for everyone. You know, it's really a fine balance of what you do to prevent voter intimidation or coercion. You know, a law enforcement presence might also be considered a form of intimidation too. So we're taking it case by case, very gingerly, trying to decide what is the best course of action, and it's all going to be on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, fantastic. What do you think has been the biggest concern that your office has fielded phone calls for?
I think, where's my ballot?
Yeah.
Because we really put it out there that, you know, every voter will receive a ballot. Those who may have registered a little later on, they're in follow-up supplemental mailings, so they might not have been in that mailing for October 1st, or actually it went out on September 29th. But we ballots are going out. Our first supplemental is going out today, so voters who may have registered later in the game will begin receiving their ballots the days following. I'm creating another supplemental mailing today that will probably go out on October 13th. So it's just trying to keep up with the level of voter activity, voter registration activity, for us to get a ballot into the hands of the voters.
Do you have a sense of how long the ballots will take, given the volume that you've got to be counted and what people can expect in terms of time delay?
Yeah, well, here's my goal, and I don't know if it's going to be reasonable or not, but, you know, we're going to have a lot of ballots turned in at the same time during the 4 days of voting. At the same time, I'm going to have more phone calls to field from voters, where should I vote and all. So somewhere there's going to be some shifting of resources to handling one or another thing. After Election Day, then, you know, that's when we start in earnest to process the remaining vote by mail ballots. Typically, we would get a supplemental report out on the Friday after the election. More recently, we've done another supplemental on the Monday following, and maybe even the Tuesday following, to be able to get all of those ballots counted shortly after the election. So that's what I anticipate our goal being, but they would be the days following the election that we'll be getting those updates out. But I think that those are our real focuses as we head into the election.
And Tommy, if someone doesn't vote for something on their ballot, if they don't fill everything out on the ballot, does that kick the ballot out?
Yeah, that's a good question. We do get that question from time to time from voters, and one of the questions are, do I have to, you know, I don't know how to vote on these state propositions. I'm unclear about this, and I'm not sure how I should vote, but I want to vote right now. And so we tell them, no, you don't have to vote on all of the contests. We will count the votes of those that you do make selections in. And so that is one thing for voters to understand, that even a partially marked ballot is okay. we will count for the contest that they marked in.
Okay, fantastic. I want to thank you. And Sarah, you have a question?
Well, a caller has a question. They called in again to our 805-549-8855 number. The caller is another signature worry. They're worried that their signature from 45 years ago won't match her signature now. And what's the best thing to do about it?
So let me also mention about signature comparison. One of the primary premises in our election code is that election officials shall liberally construe in favor of the voter. And that means also when we're checking signatures. So we do see signatures change a bit between one election or an election, you know, many years later. Sometimes we do see a kind of a shaky handwriting as they're signing many, many years later. And we lean in the favor of the voter in that case, and we accept, we'll accept the ballot. We might send a cure letter for an update, but we wouldn't hold that back against the voter.
How long after you send that letter do people have to get that update back to you?
Oh, all the way up to 2 days before I certify the election. So at present, that will be November 23rd. So we could be sending out a letter this week. They'll have more than a month to return it to us, but we encourage them to get it back to us as soon as they can.
Okay. Thank you. Boy, you got a lot in there. My gratitude to Tommy Gong, San Luis Obispo County Clerk Recorder, for joining me and talking about all of this. I'm sure you're just, you're almost talked to death here, but hang in there, Tommy.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
And a reminder that voters can call your office, and once again?
Yes, it's 805-781-5228.
Great. And we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back with more guests at the bottom of the hour.
You're listening to Central Coast Voices with host Chris Kington Barker, and you're invited to be a part of today's discussion by adding your questions or comments to the conversation. We're taking your questions at voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them into us at 805-549-8855. We'll be back with Central Coast Voices in just a moment.
To my new guests who are here to join me, Julian Rodenwald, the chair of voter services, and Julianne McAdam, the co-chair of centennial events for the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County, or the LWV, and I'll see if I can say that quickly enough times to get it done. Why don't we start with, I know the League of Women Voters is a name that a lot of people are familiar with, but they may not be familiar with just the depth of what the organization offers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Julianne, do you want me to go?
Sure, you go ahead.
Okay, so this is Julie Rodewald. I've been a member of the League for about 5 years, and we have national, state, and as well as local leagues, and we all work under the umbrella of our national and state league. And the mission of the league is empowering voters and protecting democracy. We say it sometimes in different ways, but that's essentially What we do, we are a nonpartisan organization, which means that we don't support or oppose political parties or candidates, but we do take policy positions on issues that we study and develop policies by consensus on at the national and state level, as well as even at our local level. We have some studies that we've done, particularly our civil discourse study that we've done locally. So it's a multi-prong organization, and I think that almost every community, at least in California, has a local League of Women Voters.
I would like to add to that.
Yeah.
Julie was the one that got me involved in the league about 4 years
Thank
ago,
you,
5 years ago.
Yeah, we just happened to be in a Pilates class together.
And I have been amazed at the breadth and depth of what this league does. They do, as Julie mentioned, the civil discourse, which we have gotten several local governments to sign on to being civil in their discourse. We do voter services. Julie is the chair of the voter services, so we have pro-con forums going on right now with regard to ballot measures. We've sponsored or moderated candidate forums. Julie has had a long-running project that I've been fortunate to be involved with her on, to go out to the high schools to do presentations about voting rights and register high school kids to vote. There's just an awful lot that this league does.
That it does. And the website, if anybody goes to the League of Women Voters for San Luis Obispo County or any of the League of Women Voters, it's extensive what you've been able to offer and how you are engaged in community and civics. When you mentioned the civil discourse, what has that been about?
So we did a study. One of our members, Sharon Kimball, undertook leadership on a study that we did several years ago. And we developed a pledge for civil discourse as well as a brochure that we could make available to not only elected officials, but public that want to address those elected officials. We went to all the cities and the county and asked them to adopt this pledge. And then in addition to that, we've also been conducting workshops with a lot of our local governing boards, whether it's APCD or the cities or the county, to help them better address issues in a civil manner, whether it's with each other, with their colleagues, or with members of the public. And then we also have undertaken before March, a concierge service at the city council meetings in the city of San Luis Obispo, where we have members that help the public that might not be familiar with how to address the city council. And they can practice their talks with us. We can tell them about what the rules are. Just something to make them feel more comfortable and more welcome at those meetings.
When was that undertaken?
Or I want to say maybe 2015 or 2016. And since then, it has been adopted, by several other leagues throughout the United States, even, which has been really encouraging and a good kudos for our members who were very involved with that.
What's been the response from this community since that was developed and since that's been undertaken?
Yeah, I think it's been positive. You know, certainly our concierge service, we get a lot of comments from the public, you know, thanking us for being there, as well as members of the city council and the city clerk appreciate us being there to help facilitate that discussion between, or that communication between, their constituents and themselves at the meetings.
And how is the League of Women Voters locally involved in voter services?
So Julianne was talking about a lot of what we're doing right now. And like with everybody else, we seem to be busier when we could do things in person. We're sponsoring candidates forums. Certainly, I think we have about 8 or 9 that are scheduled. And now they're virtual, so people can watch them from home, and it's a great way to participate. We're doing pros and cons presentations, which are presentations on the 12 ballot propositions, state ballot propositions. There's a website called Voters Edge, and Julianne's involved in that as well as I am and several other members. So Voters Edge is a website where candidates can submit information about why you should vote for me. And we've been working on encouraging all of our local candidates to submit to that. And then voters can go on and kind of meet the candidates, find out more about them, find out more about the federal offices that are on there as well as the state offices, and then find out a lot of information about the state propositions, including who the top 10 donors are, where are they getting their money, who's supporting those and who's opposing those. And that's VotersEdge.org is the website for that. And then the high school registration program that Julianne talked about has just been incredibly successful until we got shut down like everyone else. Although it turns out that next week I'll be talking to about 5 classes at Morro Bay just to kind of be there to answer questions, give them a little bit of background about the election, and then be there to answer questions. And then for this election, we also launched a webinar called Lunch with the League that we're holding every Monday at noon. Just a half an hour to impart information, a lot of, you know, what Tommy just talked about, but other information. How do people make sure their ballot gets counted? Yeah. What part do the voters play in making an election successful? So I think that's been a well-received endeavor as well.
I wanted to add something about the pros and cons. We just had a Zoom meeting last night, the team that is doing these pros and cons to sort of fine tune our presentation, but we are doing, I believe, 4 presentations over the next week to various groups to acquaint them with the ballot measures and to give them just sort of the highlights of what are the messages in favor, what are the suggestions against, where the money is coming from, who are the main supporters and opponents. So that's really building up now.
Great. And Julianne, you're coming in and out a little bit. On your microphone. We're still getting it, but
try turning the volume up a little bit. Would that help?
I don't know, but we can try it. There we go. with regard to the ballot measures that you had talked about, you know, when I get my voter registration stuff, it's just going through the booklet is just overwhelming. So talk a little bit about how the League of Women Voters really goes through that and what the process is for you to make a determination of where the League comes from on different ballot issues.
So I'll jump in here. And that work is really done at the state level, not the local level so much. We put out a booklet called The Easy Voter Guide, which it tries to put the propositions in plain English and in more easily understood language and really explain what it means if you vote yes and what it means if you vote no. But beyond that, we have at the state and national level, we have an education arm, which is where the Voters Edge and the Easy Voter Guide comes from, and then we have an advocacy arm, and the League does take positions on ballot measures that fit with the policies that we've adopted and our policy positions. So somebody can find out, it's called Vote with the League, and somebody can find out what our recommendations are, as well as just the nonpartisan information about this is what the ballot measure does. But we'll have, this is our recommendation, and this is why we're recommending this vote.
Yeah, and just in itself, like you said, breaking it down to real English so that people can understand it to make their own informed choices, not necessarily right. to follow along with what the league is recommending, but to really understand and double check, it's a useful tool. Tommy was talking about just kind of how inundating this election has been for his services. And Julie, you're wearing two hats because prior to Tommy, you were in his shoes. So, you know, how has it been for the League of Women Voters locally too? Have you found there's a lot of more desire for information, more concern?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, we're all in that same learning curve that everybody else is. I mean, you know, when we were talking back in May and June, it's like, you know, what are we even going to be able to do for this election? And we really thought that Voters Ed would be a great resource because in-person campaigning is going to be curtailed. It's going to be a way that candidates can get out their word to the voters. But I think we were really surprised at how the demand for the candidates' forums and the pros and cons presentation has really increased. We would probably be doing those, but now we have to learn all the technology
right.
that helps us do them in this new virtual world. So it has added a bit of complexity, and Julianne's been involved obviously with the pros and cons can speak to that a little bit more.
Yes, all of our pros and cons coming up are going to be via Zoom. They're going to be virtual. And in fact, the over the last year and a half, our Centennial Committee has been held a number of events and done presentations to groups about the centennial, and that hasn't stopped. We're still doing presentations. I'm doing one next week about the centennial via Zoom. So it's been a big learning curve for a lot of us.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported station. If you just recently joined me, my guests are Julie Rodewald, the chair of Voter Services, and Julianne McAdam, co-chair of Centennial Events for the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. And we've been talking about the role of the League of Women Voters, and we're going to get into talking about passage of the 19th Amendment and how that's coming up with a very important date. To join us with your questions or comments, please either email us at voices@kcbx.org, or your questions, you can call in to 805-549-8855. You mentioned that, Julie, that you've been doing education with the younger students, and which is great to get people on board about all they need to know before they come of age even. Are there areas or ages of people here that tend not to vote as frequently as other age groups?
Yeah, it's an interesting statistic. And one of the great things about going into the high schools is that 16 and 17 year olds can pre-register to vote. So it gives us an opportunity in talking with the students to have everybody complete a voter registration card so that they'll be ready when their first election comes around. And we looked at statistics, and this was from 2016. Certainly the younger, but if we're parsing it off, 18 to 44 year olds make up, and then those of us that are older than that, make up about the same percentage of the population. But almost two thirds of the votes come from the voters that are 45 and older. And I think that really hits home to the students, because we say, and it's very true, you're allowing them to make the decisions.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to live with the decisions that they make at the ballot box a lot longer than we're going to have to live with the decisions that we make at that ballot box. So that seems to really resonate with the students. You know, what do I care about and should I, maybe I really need to think about voting and voting for what I care about. So that seems to resonate with the students. And, you know, if we can just get every, you know, I was of the age group, I turned 18 the first year that we could vote for president. And it was just such an electrifying thing that it's hard for me to imagine that people don't want to participate. But I recognize that there are, you know, various reasons why that happens. We just want to be out there and be the cheerleader and say, hey, this is why it's important, and start participating and keep doing that forever.
Understood. I want to make sure that I get to everything that you want to talk about too. So let's talk a little bit about the 19th Amendment and talk about what that 19th Amendment is first, if someone doesn't have an awareness of that.
First of all, the 19th Amendment, which was passed in 1920, said that the right to vote could not be taken away because of sex. A lot of people try to say that it granted women the right to vote. An awful lot of women believe that that they, because they were citizens of the United States, they should have had that right to vote and should not have had to fight for it. But the men who were in control didn't really agree with that perspective. So women started fighting. The struggle really began back in 1848 with the Seneca Falls Convention, which had a declaration of sentiments. Said all men and women are created equal. And from then, until 1920, women were really fighting to gain the right to vote. One of the interesting things that we've learned in pursuing this history is that there was a sort of a struggle between getting the right to vote for women and, for example, abolishing slavery. And there were a lot of abolitionists who felt that the drive to abolish slavery really had to take precedence, that that was more important. And so the fight for women got shunted aside. By the same token, an awful lot of the mainly white suffragists were worried that if they included black women too much, that might hurt their chances with the white men who were going to be voting for or against the amendment. So there are a lot of issues that are still reflected in our society today that happened throughout this process. The amendment was actually finally ratified by the states. Tennessee was the last state to ratify on August 18th, 1920, and then the amendment was certified on August 26th. But, as I've said, for a great many African American women, especially in the South, they did not get the right to vote until 1965 with the Voting Rights Act for them to fully be enfranchised. And we have to continue to guard our right to vote and fight for it because it's not a given. And there are forces that would hamper people's right to vote. And so we really do have to take it seriously.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Julianne said there too. And it's one of the things that we really stress with the students is don't take these rights for granted. You know, people fought very hard for the right to vote. And certainly, I mean, if we look at the changes to voting over the years, it was in my lifetime that we got the abolishment of poll taxes and literacy tests, and 18-year-olds got the right to vote. So, you know, young people now just think, well, everybody had the right to vote forever, and it wasn't true, and they need to realize that it does continue to be a fight.
Yeah, and Julie, you've got coming up, and I'm going to direct this to you, because Julianne, I'm having some problems with the quality of the sound and being able to hear. The upcoming 100th anniversary, are there some plans for that? Or in this COVID environment, is there, you know?
Yeah, so
like pop a bottle of champagne and call it good. I mean,
well, I think when this year's over, there will be a lot of champagne being popped. The committee that worked on the centennial had two big events planned, and we were able to get one of those in February, which was celebrating the 100-year anniversary of the formation of the League of Women Voters. And some of us in the league look back on that. It was a beautiful event. We had a fabulous speaker from that was the former president of our national league. And we look back on it. That was the last thing that we did before we went into shutdown, because that's what it felt like. And then they also had a big event planned to celebrate the August centennial. And in San Luis at Mission Plaza, but of course that got scrapped. So everything kind of went back to being virtual, but we are still being invited to give presentations to groups to talk about the centennial and what it means. And I think that becomes now our mission, is to continue. You know, it's not just, okay, we celebrated the anniversary and now we're all done. We need to keep that in people's minds, that we need to keep moving forward with voting rights and encouraging, you know, we're stronger when everyone votes and when everybody has a chance to participate.
Yeah. And I've just got, you know, a few minutes before I need to take off. So I want to make sure that I'm getting across the points that you wanted to get across. Julie, I'm going to go back to you here.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, don't take things for granted. Recognize, you know, how we got to where we are today, but we still have a lot more work to do. And if you have any interest, we are, I think, I mean, I like Julianne said, I've been so impressed since I've joined the league with the energy and the commitment that its members bring to what we do, which really in our local league is all about educating voters, encouraging participation, and getting people educated. And that's really what we'd like to continue and to gather, you know, more people get involved in this. It really is a very, very rewarding organization to join.
And it's not just for women. It's the League of Women Voters, but we take anybody. We have a lot of men members too. We want students to join. We want anybody.
Right. And that, you know, that is a good point. We say that it's called the League of Women Voters because it was formed to help women enter civic life. But we remove the gender inequity, if you will, in the 1960s, 1970s, and welcome, yeah, all members. It's great to have the participation.
Thank you both for being here. I want to thank my guests, Tommy Gong, San Luis Obispo County Clerk Recorder, Julie Rollenwald, Chair of Voter Services, and Julianne McAdam, co-chair of Centennial Events for the League of Women Voters here in San Luis Obispo. Next week, Fred Monroe is going to be your host. He's going to be talking about some of the difficulties the wine environment is having, the wine industry, and you'll definitely want to hear that. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and I want to thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices. Thank you.